Well, first of all, we're back on Wednesday. After like 2 months, we've been saying next week we'll be back on Wednesday, and this week we finally had enough news, I guess, to finally get back on schedule. So really, it's all thanks to this Huawei ordeal, I think. On a practically speaking, it means that anyone that currently has a Huawei phone will continue to be able to use the Play Store, but may not get further software updates.
Yeah.
And future Huawei devices, if they were to launch with Android, can't access the Play Store or any of Google's services at all, pretty much.
Yeah, basically. So on the updates point, Google, what it seems from the outside, Google hasn't provided any specifics, but is that their engineers can no longer work with Huawei engineers to basically certify updates, to push to work with carriers to push them out. That entire infrastructure appears to be banned from the moment. Well, we'll talk about the 90-day reprieve a bit later, but the status quo, the intended goal of this ban is basically these companies cannot have a working relationship anymore. There can be no cooperation, there can be no technology transfer, knowledge transfer, that kind of thing.
Yeah, which basically, I mean, there's far, far-reaching implications for this. I'm assuming a lot of our viewers are probably U.S.-based and therefore probably have very little familiarity with the Huawei phones at all, with the exception of maybe Honor phones, which are obviously, you know, under they're a sub-brand to Huawei. I mean, Huawei, it's funny, actually, because remember, was it CES this year that there were the rumor was that Huawei's going to launch a flagship and it was going to launch and be available on AT&T?
Yes.
And that fell through. And I guess that was kind of, it turned out, it was a little bit of a precursor to this. I mean, there was a little bit of hype in the Android space. You know, it seemed like, you know, Huawei, after many years of doing this Honor stuff and, you know, even phones being available in the US but not available through any carriers, being able to be purchased unlocked, you know, basically testing the waters, and it seemed like they were about to make their big splashy US debut, and then, you know, that got pulled at seemingly the last minute, and maybe even the week of CES that AT&T deal got scrapped, because it was, I think it was pretty well set in stone.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a CES keynote, and then the What looks like happened was AT&T was pressured by the U.S. government to pull the phone so that consumers would not be able to buy a Huawei device and interact with a Huawei device on the American network.
Right.
Running around that.
But I guess this news is far more impactful for those that are in Europe.
Yes.
Because Huawei is for those that don't know, a much bigger brand there than it is here. Bigger than Google, you know, I think the Google Pixel is larger here than Huawei is, because Huawei basically doesn't have any, you know, footprint at all except for Honor. In Europe, it's actually Apple, Samsung, and I think Huawei's third. I don't know. I'm 100% sure on where the standings are. But Huawei's pretty big deal, or they're pretty. Our Damien would testify to the fact that a lot of people in Europe use Huawei phones as daily drivers and see them as a really viable alternative to Apple and Samsung phones. So for those people, there's been wide reaching implications. For instance, there were reports that some people that were like carriers or companies that were taking trade-ins for devices just suddenly stopped taking them, because suddenly there's a threat to Huawei devices being basically even usable in Europe after this. So
yeah. So in terms of the impact, again, like you were saying at the top, existing Huawei devices will work at least for the next 90 days. Nothing, the experience will be unchanged. From the U.S. government's perspective, this is intended to get people off Huawei phones and telecommunication equipment into new devices and replacements, that kind of thing. But in practice, for the average user that has a Huawei phone, after that, they can still access the Play Store, they can still download updates. but there will be no security updates, no monthly patches. That's what's going to stop. So, well, again, this is all speculation at this point because Google hasn't confirmed what the outlook after 90 days is going to be. But the insinuation is that no software update, no monthly patches, much less Android Q for many of these flagship devices released by Huawei. And that's detrimental.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I guess further, the implications are even greater for Huawei itself. I mean, Huawei is obviously very, very dependent on Google for the software of its entire phone business. And now Huawei kind of has to figure out if Android's not going to be a viable software or operating system for their phones going forward after this 90 days. What is it going to look like? What will they do? They have to do something. And there have been reports dating back all the way back to 2012 that Huawei has been working on a backup plan, essentially, for Android. I mean, whether that meant Google itself for some reason decided to, you know, have not allow Android to be used by third-party OEMs for some reason, or if some kind of bigger scale political problem or trade war caused that problem. And it seems like it's good that they had that, that they've been working on that for more than half a decade now. Although there were some quick conflicting reports this week on exactly what the state of that supposed alternative operating system is, and they kind of came back to back.
Yes. Yeah, so the first reports from Chinese media claiming that Huawei's alternative OS would be ready by this fall, at the earliest. And that is very ambitious statements. There was also this one interesting detail about Android apps running. Was it 40 or 60% faster?
Yeah, I think 60%.
60%
yeah, so
faster.
These reports supposedly stemmed from a few different places. On the Chinese media side, apparently Richard Yu, the CEO of Huawei, was having WeChat conversations with Chinese media about this. And I don't know exactly what happened, but apparently Richard told a couple of Chinese media outlets that this was happening, that by the fall, supposedly, they were ready to just dump Android and just launch a phone with their own, you know, first party operating system, which I was immediately like, yeah, right. Because, well, I mean, yeah, right to that idea in general, that Huawei being, you know, one of the more incompetent of the Android OEMs when it comes to software, being ready to launch a primetime OS that's going to be available on, you know, tens, hundreds of millions of phones. Potentially over the coming years. That was just a laughable idea to me. Even more laughable, some claim that recompiled Android apps for this operating system would run 60% faster. And not to mention that 60% faster metric is like, it's so undefined. Like, what would cause it to run 60% faster? Is it because the phone that would be running this proprietary operating system would have better hardware, and that's what was causing, or where that number came from? Or is it something architecturally about their operating system that is somehow just that much crazy more efficient than Android? It just doesn't make any sense for a lot of different reasons. But my initial gut reaction was like, that this is hilarious. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know what the disconnect is here. Is the CEO of Huawei like just lying to Chinese media to try and I guess do damage control? Because this makes, you know, I mean, this makes China look bad, right? That Huawei is dependent on an American company that has now been cut off, right? It looks China. There's a little bit of a hit to their pride, I think, that Huawei is dependent on Google. And I don't know, is it maybe Richard is doing some kind of damage control to, you know, recover Huawei's image, or at least cause positive headlines, even if they're not true. I can definitely see a tension that might be happening between, you know, Huawei and perhaps even, you know, representatives in the government. I'm not sure. I mean, this is all pure speculation, but I could see that being a possibility, that Richard felt like a lot of pressure to rectify the situation. On the other hand, a report came out from The Information not 20 minutes after these couple reports dropped from Chinese media, saying the exact opposite.
Yes, they had sourcing describing this alternative OS as Project Z, codenamed Project Z internally. That they confirmed that it's been in development for several years, but it's had a very turbulent ups and downs in terms of the actual creation process. In its current state, the general sentiment is that it's not ready. It's far from ready from being a viable OS, and it definitely throws into question that idea will be ready by this fall. Another thing we learned was that the original intention of this OS was for the domestic Chinese market, where Play services already aren't available, where the OS right. is backed up by many of Huawei's own cloud services and App Store. So that
that might be one explainer of why these reports seem so polar opposite, is that perhaps they're talking about different things. Maybe Huawei actually is planning to launch a phone in 6 months that has some rudimentary version of this operating system in mainland China. That's a different prospect than the idea that, oh, Google took Android from us. All right, well, we're going to have our next flagship is just going to launch with our own OS, and it's going to be available worldwide. You know, like, that's a completely different prospect. And so that might be what makes both of these headlines true, that Huawei is really far from ever really replacing Android in its phones, but really close to launching some very rudimentary version of its own operating system on a phone in China. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, from other tidbits from this interview, The Information also had an interview with Richard Yu, and he basically confirmed that Huawei is being forced to create their own operating system, and more importantly, an ecosystem. So this is the other big thing right now that will be the most major impact, I think, at the end of the day, is what apps consumers can access. Without the Play Store, you lose so much. And this is speaking to you, the European user base. They lose so many apps. These new devices lose so many apps to the point where it's not viable using a Huawei device, really. The next, I don't know if users will feel compelled to just keep using their phones or their Huawei phones, but the next time an upgrade comes up, they won't be using a Huawei phone, even if it has a new OS, because the apps aren't there, the experiences aren't there. And I think this is the biggest pulpit, I guess, that Google owns and controls, is these apps.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's really the big question, is what are European owners of Huawei phones going to do in 6 months? Or even in 3 months, you know, like, or if they're buying a phone, unless something changes soon,
which it could.
I mean, this whole thing could be walked back for all we know. But if nothing changes, then when European people are going to the store in 3 months to buy a phone, Huawei phones will pretty much not be an option for them. That's going to be a hit to Huawei's business for sure. Another interesting thing, like on a grander scale, is that like with this problem, Huawei is now reportedly thinking about picking up one of these APK rehosting sites. I think it's called Aptoide, that might be a potential solution to this problem, kind of. It's not clear, but like if they're cut off from the Play Store and they want to keep selling phones in Europe and they can't transition to their own first party Play Store alternative, which is another thing they're apparently pursuing. They're kind of doing, it seems like, according to reports and what we've seen this week, is that they're doing both things. They both have been establishing and want to establish their own true alternative to the Play Store that they can just have as their own. Although that's, like, as you mentioned in the report from The Information, it's definitely an uphill battle for Huawei. Its chances to build a true alternative to the App Store or the Play Store is, I mean, the App Store and the Play Store are pretty much a duopoly, and they're pretty impossible a challenge, I think. Samsung, in its own ways, has kind of tried to dip its toes in that too. So, anyways, it's just interesting to see, like, you know, if they want to. If they have to keep selling Android running Huawei phones in Europe, and they might be able to find some kind of workaround, and in that workaround might be some kind of third party Android app repository of some kind. Mm-hmm. There's a couple that come to mind. APK Mirror, that's run by the Android Police people, is one of them, and this other one that they're reportedly looking into, they're apparently talking about buying or something. And that's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting proposition to think about. And that raises, I think, in my mind, another question, which is, like, given that Huawei goes that route and it just kind of becomes accepted that these, I guess, unofficial APK hosts are basically the source by which Huawei users, particularly in Europe, are downloading Google's apps. Mm-hmm. Is that something that, like, up to today, people have the ability to download all of Google's first party apps on APK Mirror, for instance, all across the world? Like, it's just open, and Google has just turned a blind eye to that. APK Mirror has received some DMCAs from some other companies that have not been happy with the fact that they're rehosting APKs, you know, without the license, technically the license to do so. And that's always something I've been curious about, is why does Google allow APK Mirror and other sites like it to continue to exist? And the answer I've heard is that it provides a safe or a good, if people are going to rehost and share APKs anyway, then APK Mirror is a safe place to do it. And it's kind of quietly ordained, consecrated as the good place to do it. And they just kind of turn a blind eye to the fact that I don't think technically from a legal standpoint that they should be rehosting those APKs. And I think Google has every right to, you know, to request that they be taken down and to force them to be taken down. And my question is, all this to say, my question is, if these third-party APK sites step into this, I guess, gap that's being made, and Google's apps are being downloaded on Huawei phones via this avenue, is Google suddenly going to have to step in and stop closing a blind or turning a blind eye to these APK sites? Is there going to be some government pressure for Google to try and wall that off? Yeah. I don't know. It's just one of those, like, I guess, more in the weeds implications of this whole ordeal that I've been thinking about. That, I don't know. Who knows? But that's just, I don't know. That's my one and only unique contribution to this conversation.
and in terms of other in the weeds topics, it's okay. Let's say Huawei successfully creates a third party alternative by buying or creating one. Can companies like Twitter or Facebook upload their apps to it? Because they would still, at the end of the day, be working with Huawei, and that is what the U.S. government wants to tap down on. Would Twitter and Facebook get sanctioned for officially putting the apps out there?
Yeah. Even if Huawei did, you know, pursue its own app marketplace, would U.S. companies be even able to all make their apps available through them? That's basically what you're asking, right?
Yes.
And that's a good question too. It's yet to be seen. There's lots of things around this that are yet to be seen, I think. But yeah, I mean, another interesting thing that came out of this was that, like, apparently Google working with Huawei is only just the beginning. ARM is also now having to suspend business with Huawei.
Yeah.
Which means, so this is affecting not only the software side of Huawei's smartphone business, but also the hardware side.
And we're just talking about phones right now. Microsoft has been very tight-lipped about whether Huawei is going to lose their Windows license. That would be the other very big shoe to drop. Obviously, mobile devices are running the world today. But if they, if Huawei loses both its mobile division and its desktop, well, desktop laptop division, that's going to be consequential for this company.
Yeah, actually, the Huawei MateBook X was pulled from the Microsoft Store today. So that's, I mean, that's one of Huawei's few products that has been a commercial.
Yeah.
Maybe not a commercial success, because it hasn't probably sold crazy numbers, but it's been a critical success in the United States, and I'm sure it's, I mean, obviously sold more than they've sold first party phones. So. it's just, and there's a lot of implications that go even beyond Google. And then also today we saw that the Mate 20 Pro, which is one of their newest handsets, was removed from Google's Android Q beta page. So it was on the list of devices that were to get the Android Q beta as announced at Google I/O, and that's been pulled out from under them too. So
yeah. Well, actually, again, like I said, Google hasn't confirmed what this post lack of cooperation will looks like. But I think it's going to be very interesting how Google, on the existing devices that it still can push updates to, and the Play Store remains available on, how Google attempts to secure these devices without having monthly security patches. So I think we're going to see an interesting expansion of Google Play Protect. It's and Google Play services on existing devices to provide a new way of security after patches can't be. The real unfortunate thing right now is that this ban is happening after Android Q, because Q has Project Mainline, which should be able to push updates without doing the carrier certification dance. That's the current limiting factor today. So this is an inopportune time for Google's roadmaps, really, for this to be happening.
Well, all this said, how do you feel about it? What do you think about Huawei being walled off from the United States, basically?
That's
and other companies.
That's a
What's your 15 second, like, how have you felt about it? Do you feel frustrated? Do you
follow up with what frame of context? The political, the geopolitical, the consumer perspective? Pick one.
Yeah. I'll
give you 15 seconds on each.
Political.
Okay, so this is all in the context of a trade war, obviously. So it's okay. The one really interesting point I've been seeing on Twitter is the fact that people are up in arms. I think the Europeans are up in arms that their sovereignty is getting trampled on. Tiny sovereignty is getting trampled on by the US. But then it's getting bad that Huawei is being banned. And that if you look on the flip side, these European companies, these American companies, have no operation in China. They have been banned, or effectively banned. There's no Google, there's no Facebook. The services and companies that do business in China, they have, like Apple, they have to hand over services to local companies so that it can be subject to their security services and the Chinese governmental security services and analysis. So there's this up in arms about, yes, Huawei is being banned from the rest of the world, but the rest of the world is already banned in China. So there's that one frame to look at.
Sure.
And I guess.
Yeah, and you mentioned Apple too, and I won't talk about it because this is not an Apple podcast. We can leave this for the 9 to 5 Mac people to talk about, maybe. But Apple is if China retaliates with some kind of sanctions on Apple, that's going to be a really big problem for Apple, because they've for the last several years talked about China as being one of their biggest growth. I mean, it hasn't panned out as they had hoped, because the Chinese people haven't bought as many iPhones as they had hoped. So I guess maybe in the last year or so, they've stopped thinking of that as something to bank on for further growth, but it's something they've talked about a lot, that China is one of their biggest opportunity markets. And if, and not to mention the cultural, implications. There was one report that came out that said that apparently even in the wake of just this, now using Apple phones in China is suddenly a little bit more, I guess, taboo. So
yes. There's that angle, but then there's also the fact that the actual retaliation, these phones are made in China. Apple does have, they're making the iPhone 6S in India, so that's one alternative to get devices out in the world. But India does not have the scale to supply the world with iPhones. So we haven't seen China retaliate yet against US companies. And I think that is when the shoe drops. That's when we see the full impact of the US's decision to ban Huawei, when China retaliates on other US companies.
They retaliate.
I would think it's a guarantee. But yes, the alternative is obviously both sides coming to the table and achieving a trade deal that drops all these restrictions and whatnot.
Sure.
This is going to be a very long road.
Well, I'll give you my perspective from a consumer standpoint. And I know this is a really, really bad take, but I don't use Huawei devices at all, and I don't care about Huawei devices, and the less that I have to talk about them on this show and in my life, the better. I know that's a really, really bad take, but that's honestly how I felt about it. Like,
and
after this week is over, it's like, hopefully I don't have to talk about Huawei again for 10 years. That'd be great.
I think you're being highly optimistic.
Sorry.
About the outcome.
Sorry, I apologize for that. Anyways, let's move on and talk about the ever-recurring topic on this show, which is AR, and I guess specifically Google Glass, because that's my history. Speaking of, today is my 5-year anniversary of the first post I ever wrote on 9to5 Google, and back then, half my posts were about Google Glass, so apparently nothing has changed in 5 years, because we're on the show today talking about Google Glass. Google Glass Enterprise Edition 2 launched this week. It's weird to me that this price is even mentioned. Apparently, CNBC reported that's $999. And as I reported and tweeted and everything else, and as we saw at, I think saw it, we popped up at Geekbench and FCC, so there wasn't much about this device that we didn't know. But it's just pretty much just some spec bumps, and Google dropped a little press release to go along with this announcement, and just basically said, yeah, it's some spec bumps. Just, I guess they want to get out ahead of someone leaking it or something. I don't know, because there wasn't much, there's not much news here, at least that I see.
Yeah, so it's this Google Glass Enterprise Edition 2. It looks exactly like the first one. Yes.
Which looked exactly like the first one.
Yeah, the Explorer edition. So, I guess just briefly, some of these notable specs. There's a new Qualcomm chip, an XR1. It's the augmented reality stuff. 10 nanometer, which is surprisingly advanced. Lon Amadeo of Ars Technica was amusingly pointing out that Qualcomm made a chip for augmented reality, but they have not put a similar investment in Wear OS and smartwatch chips.
To which I would say, Google Glass is actually making money.
Yes.
That's been my rebuttal to everyone befuddled by the fact that Google Glass is still a thing, like now, 6 years later, and befuddled at the fact that Qualcomm's investing in building chips for devices like this, and that's that these devices are actually selling pretty well, and they actually have found a niche in the enterprise, which none of us know about, we're not connected to, we don't use them that way. I'm probably going to get my hands on one of these devices in the next week or two, and I have no use for it. But apparently, they do have use cases in the enterprise.
Manufacturing.
And there's lots of money in business. If there's data that shows buying these $1,000 devices saves companies $1,100, then it's a no-brainer, even if it's just $1,100, right? So it's like, it's a business tool.
Yeah, so some other quick specs, 3 gigs of RAM, one's Android Oreo, which is it's only one release old, but almost two. It has USB-C, has a camera, and that's basically it on the specs front. So the other big news of this was Since Google Glass ended the Explorer program and started Enterprise, it was moved back into the X division under Alphabet, Alphabet's Moonshot Factory. And with today's announcement, this week's announcement, it was moved back into Google proper under the Augmented Reality and Virtual Reality division that houses Daydream, AR Core, Google Lens to an extent. So this is
Google under Clay, right?
Under Clay before, yes. So calling this Google Glass is correct because it is now a Google product again.
Now it's Google Glass again. For a while it was X Glass.
X Glass. Nobody called it that, I'm afraid. But yeah. So this is Google's
Technically Google's first AR product since Google Glass. Well, yeah. Headset, AR headset since Google Glass Explorer Edition.
Yeah, basically. Ignoring Daydream, which was only a pass-through. You still wore a camera, but yeah.
Oh, right.
But yeah, this is Google making moves in tiny, known, obvious moves in augmented reality. And I'm personally surprised to see it in this AR and VR division versus off being in Google Cloud, where it's just strictly enterprise. So I'm not sure what the tea leaves of this are or who's exactly working on the consumer one right now, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, part of the product being under Google AR VR is the
horrible
team
name,
being under.
By the way.
What?
Horrible name.
Oh, Google AR VR. Yeah, I mean, obviously part of the product being under that umbrella is the team being under that umbrella. So, I mean, there may be reasons for it being moved back under Google that are beyond just it makes some product sense. I there's probably lots of talent that have built this device and that have been working on AR since. I'm sure there's some people that are still on the Glass team that have been on the Glass team since the first Explorer edition. And, you know, there's talent, and it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense to bring that under the umbrella of Google. If Google is on the verge of, you know, really, pursuing consumer AR in some way, it makes sense to have all that talent under one roof. And it might have made sense to not have them under that roof for a while as Glass was establishing itself as a profitable business on its own.
Yeah.
And I guess profitable is probably not the right word, given I don't think they've made back their crazy huge initial investment in marketing that they did with the Explorer Edition. But from what I've heard, it's making a lot of money. So if it isn't profitable, I'm sure it will be profitable soon. Or else they would have canned it by now, I think.
Yeah, and there's many other products are proven. So.
For sure.
Glass.
And so, yeah. Glass. It's Glass, and yeah. yeah. Anyways, next up we can talk about some more Google hardware that's not Glass. There have been two devices that made passes at the FCC this week.
Yes, so...
Or weekend.
The first one is a Nest product. It was under the Nest FCC ID. And
Google Nest.
Google Nest, yes. And for all intents and purposes, it looks like a new indoor camera, a new entry-level indoor camera, which Google hasn't really updated since around 2015-16 when they bought Dropcam and just rebranded. If you look at the Google Nest camera lineup right now, it's all these stark white devices and this one black camera that looks totally different. So... I think affordable is the way to go. It's interesting that they're still making an entry-level indoor camera that isn't a Nest Cam IQ. So I guess there is still a place for a cheaper camera to get people hooked.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially when people are buying, or it makes sense for people to buy lots of these.
Yeah.
And currently, the entry-level one is like 3 years old, 4 years old, I don't know. And it's $200 at retail, which there have been deals that have brought it down to half that, but at retail price, it's still $200. And I think for a lot of people that have decent sized homes, if they want to, I mean, honestly, the biggest use case for me with Nest security cameras is not security. It's keeping an eye on my dog or keeping an eye on who's home whenever I'm out of the house. I mean, that's really the big thing. And I think it makes sense. I mean, I didn't realize this. You know, they call it a security camera, but it has a lot of uses that are not just purely for, you know, the 1 in 1,000 chance that someone is going to break into your house on any given day. So, yeah, I mean, that if they were $99, me as a consumer, I would probably be tempted to put one in, like, a lot of the rooms in my home that are not bedrooms. I probably would, but $199, it's like, especially for the outdated tech that it is, it's like, doesn't make sense.
And you ask why you need this. Once the price is cheap enough, you just buy it, really.
But I think they should be selling these in 3-packs. Honestly, I think they should do a Nest Cam 3-pack for $299 and just be like entry level basic.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that'd be
Amazon,
that'd be great.
Is definitely undercutting companies with their cheap hardware brand. So the next item was spotted on the Google's FCC ID, and it's this Bluetooth only screenless device is what we've been able to glean, Bluetooth LE. So it's an accessory, most likely.
And doesn't have a screen.
So, no Wi-Fi is the key here. So we don't think it's a wireless smartwatch, and that it doesn't have Wi-Fi. This isn't Stadia either, because the Stadia controller connects over Wi-Fi. So what we're left at looking is Bluetooth headphones, maybe Pixel Buds 2 that was rumored last year. It's really early, I think, to have them be certified already.
And they also mentioned that the FCC information is in a companion app, correct?
Yes, there is.
As of today, the Pixel Buds don't have a companion app.
Unless they're referring to the Google app. But it's still buried. It's the settings for the Pixel Buds within the Google app today are still buried. And I don't, since this their assistant devices, I don't think Google would spin it out into a new app. So that's... maybe we just ruled out Pixel Buds as what this is. My pet theory is that this is a fitness tracker, a basic fitness tracker, as part of Google's whole health initiative that they're doing, which makes
that
sense.
Might make sense.
Bluetooth only, no, doesn't need a screen. We've actually already seen Google make Google's hardware division for this art exhibit in Italy, I believe. They created this basic band that captures heart rate, sweat sensitivity, that kind of stuff. Basic health metrics. And I don't know, I could see a basic fitness tracker that ties directly into Fit. That's basic enough, that's unobtrusive enough, that's cheap enough.
Yeah. You know where Google has seen the most success with hardware?
Yeah.
Everywhere that they've replicated the Chromecast model.
Yes.
Which is a simple device that does few functions, done really well, polished.
Very polished. And
it has a low price. That's where Google's hardware has succeeded as of today. Mm-hmm. Are there any exceptions to that rule? I mean...
The whole Mini, the Nest.
The Pixel, the first gen Pixelbook is the closest thing to an exception, in my opinion. Although we don't know what the sales look like for that thing. I'm basing that purely off of how often I see them and, you know, what people have said about them. But, I think a simple fitness tracker that is connected to Google Fit and has Google AI powered functionality that is unique to Google.
Process in the cloud. Whatever.
Google Coach or whatever it is that David reported last week. Like everything in the cloud, charge $30-$50 for it, whatever.
Ooh.
And just have it very, very AI powered and very basic hardware. I think that is like that would fall under the Chromecast model.
Yeah.
To me, it seems like that's what they're kind of trying to do with the Pixel 3a. It's like, it's not quite you know, it's not, it's obviously not $30, but it seems like they're trying to do that in the sense that it's a basic device that's polished, does everything it's supposed to do, and has unique AI-powered functionality that Google, only Google, can do at the moment. In the case of the Pixel 3a, it's the Pixel 3's awesome camera, you know? And so, and other things, not just that, but Google Assistant is obviously the leader. I mean, that's the one thing when people tell me, should I get an Android phone or an iPhone? And I'm like, the one thing, if you're using an iPhone right now, that you are missing out on, that you don't even know you're missing out on, is how good the Assistant is. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's deeply tied in with the Pixel 3a. So I see the Pixel 3a as kind of following that model. And I would get on board with the idea of a health tracker being under the same umbrella.
Mm. Do you have any other wild card theories? This could be a remote. I don't know for what, but a remote.
Yeah, I don't have really. The thing that makes it hard is companion app. I mean, yeah. One of my initial ideas was, okay, maybe this isn't, because I think we've heard from a tipster that there is. Oh yeah, I've heard from a tipster that the Android TV dongle.
Oh yes.
Google is at least in conversation about actually launching an Android TV dongle. Hmm. But I don't think that falls under
no Wi-Fi.
It doesn't. It would not have Wi-Fi, and yeah, and there's no, there wouldn't be a companion app for that either. So that, I mean, that's the only other thing that I can think about.
Even Google Clips is Wi-Fi, which is another wireless device accessory that Google has released in the past, recently.
Do you know what I would like to see Google do? And I think this would fall under the requirements for this. And this is totally a wild card. Maybe you could tell me.
Oh, can I guess?
But you know how... Yeah, go ahead, guess.
Is it like if you find your lost items kind of thing?
No, that's not, but that's also a good idea. What my idea is, you know how, what are those cameras called that like Gen Zers use these days, life, that are like Polaroids?
Life.
I forget.
Instacameras.
Camera, Gen Z, what are they called?
Instacameras?
Instax. Maybe. Instax. Yeah, Fujifilm Instax. That's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Instax, which is, you know, they're just really popular with
Gen Z
Instagrammers. What if Google did a Bluetooth pairing digital version of Instax that was powered by their camera prowess and charged like $100 for it or something like that?
Okay.
And I also feel like if you Google Instax, I feel like you can also see that they're the design of these. They like tend to use these pastel colors, Google could do one that would align with their design language. I just think that would be so cool.
That is a trip.
Because it wouldn't have Wi-Fi. It would have Bluetooth, and it probably would have a companion app. So
yeah,
that's. Out of left field, and almost certainly not happening, but yeah. I would love for it to happen and point back to this episode as being a profit on this. So
a wireless charger, maybe?
That's what I don't know.
Yeah, it's where veering off into random.
Anyways,
yes.
In other made by Google news / happenings in the last 4 days, there have been some, with every Pixel device, there have been issues after the device launched. Pixel 3 was no exception to this. In Pixel 3a, I think the biggest ruckus was the scratchability of the back, and also like 4 gigs of RAM causing apps to crash. Those are probably the two biggest things in my mind. It seems as the Pixel 3a has avoided, I think the Pixel 3a has avoided any intense like criticism.
Yeah,
it seems like, it doesn't seem like they've had any headlines. We haven't written anything that's like, maybe, Pixel 3a has this critical flaw, Pixel 3a owners are, you know, mad about XYZ, except this one thing, which is apparently some people are receiving Pixel, this is just a minor manufacturing flaw, but some people are apparently receiving Pixel 3as that have the cutouts on the bottom
slanted,
crooked slanted. And that's just,
it's
weird,
just, it's just,
but
cut out wrong. It's,
yeah, it's like one of the tooling machines in the factory was just like off. Uncalibrated or something.
Yeah, basically.
Just off by millimeters. And just enough to where if you look at it with your eyes, you can tell. And I'm sure Google will replace devices. Yeah, if you have one of these devices that has a crooked cutout on the bottom, I'm sure Google will replace it. So just contact support. But that's apparently a thing. There was also a new Phone X ad this week. And so for those that don't know, Phone X / Pixel 3 ads have been on billboards and on the web and videos. Up to now, they've pretty much compared the Phone X, which is the iPhone XS/10, with the Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3a, highlighting low-light photography. Mm. And now they're doing what? Google Maps?
Yes, AR navigation, which is cool. Yeah. It's a good use case.
It's a unique use case. There's nothing like it.
Except on Google Maps for iOS, which Google...
That's true.
Whatever. It's whatever. I just have to say, every time we talk about Phone X, you're being cowards. Use the real name.
I think it's a play on words, because I think they also want to just say, like, this is the any other phone. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think it makes sense to leave it vague, because otherwise that comparison, like, as it is, that comparison is applicable to anyone that doesn't own a Pixel.
Yeah.
And if you put I on it, then that means okay, I don't have an iPhone. I don't care about the Pixel. I'm just going to tune this out.
I know, but it's just, come on, be courageous, be bold. We all know who you're cheekily talking about. But yeah.
For sure.
The AR navigation in Maps is it's still a Pixel exclusive. Who knows how long, but if you buy a Pixel 3a right now, you will get AR navigation out of the box.
Yep. I lied, actually. There is another problem that's happening with Pixel 3a and 3a XL. Apparently, people are reporting random device shutdowns,
yeah,
which is odd, but also not
software,
crazy. I don't know.
Solve it in software?
Presumably a software thing, but who knows. Also, with the Pixel 3a, you had an awesome spot over the weekend. You noticed, just by chance, how did you notice this? Was it because of me?
Partly because of you, and partly because I wanted to buy one. I wanted to buy a mod case on Saturday night for a reason. I'll leave it at that. When I went to try and buy one on the Google store, I couldn't...
Saturday night at midnight?
Yeah, basically. There's a reason, but whatever. Anyways, it's been scrubbed clean from the Google store. And I knew that it was recent because the day before I.O., you were trying to buy one.
Yeah, literally the day before I.O., I was trying to buy one of these because my plan at the time was to give my mother a Pixel 3 for Mother's Day, or give my mother my Pixel 3 for Mother's Day and buy her my case to let her have. And obviously, that didn't pan out because I ended up giving my mother a Pixel 3a. And apparently, if I had wanted to buy her my case, I wouldn't have had that opportunity because you can't. Google killed it.
Yeah.
Not too surprising. They were $50, and I would doubt they were all too popular. So
people like the fabric.
I'm sure they had. Yeah, I'm sure it was costing a lot for them just to have that
factory,
whatever manufacturing facility or whatever set up. So
yeah.
Anyways.
So on the software front, we have some announcements. The smart displays, they're testing this new home screen UI that first we spotted on the Nest Hub Max. Whatever your ambient display background is, it stays over when you swipe and activate the home screen. So there's like a background image for the very first card, and Google's been testing this out. I lost it just yesterday, but then there's a new Google firmware update that appears to be more widely rolling it out. So I'm sure we'll see it at least by the time the Nest Hub Max comes out, because this new design is better. It better fits into when you look at the your Nest Hub Max for face match, it will just automatically slide over a card. So that's something that smart display users should be expecting. Similarly, if you are waiting for a Lenovo smart clock announced at CES, they are now in pre-orders. You can buy one for $79, and they'll ship June 2nd, early June. So that's an exciting review to look forward to, and a kind of big smart display summer for Google, I guess.
Yeah, it's the first expansion for smart displays beyond the, I guess, smart display form factor. Yeah. Apparently, this is Android things, or a fork of Android things, just like the other non-Google smart display offerings are.
So,
and it'll be interesting to see other smart clocks. I would like a round one, like the Echo. Is it Spot or Dot? I can't even remember. Spot?
Maybe, I don't know. Their names are confusing. But yes, a proper wall clock with maybe like a digital screen at the center or something like that. But whatever.
Yes.
I think
that'd be nice.
June 2nd, I'm sure we'll be tabling our discussion of whether you should be buying this for $79 versus a Home Hub for $99 when discounted, but we'll wait for
eight. Nest Hub, you mean?
Yes.
Come on, man. This is your job. You got to get this right.
What?
This is your job. You got to know.
Home Hub?
It's Nest Hub.
I'm
Nest Hub.
I don't like that name. It's.
I don't either. I don't blame you. Mm. We can just say Home Hub in protest.
But yes, the Nest Hub. That is a comparison for a future day. And the other two software things that happened this week is Google Assistant is rolling out to Messages after also being announced at CES 2019. So you can get some help. This is Messages 4.4. It's all on device. We haven't really seen a wide rollout of it yet, but it's coming finally. And the new Google Lens is also beginning to roll out to some Google App beta users. This is the design just shown off at I/O, where you have these like filters, these modes that you can manually go into and point at a menu to see Google Maps results, or at a check and calculate the breakdown. So yeah, this is rolling out. And the one thing I always appreciate about Lens is after the features are announced, it's usually quick to roll out. And I guess lastly, rounding this list off, is Google Calendar now has dark mode, and Google officially announced it for Google Keep as well. So this is a basic theming going on, and it just basically switches on the dark theme for both of these apps. So that is, it looks really nice. And I guess the very last thing, is Google Search had this minor redesign where you'll start seeing favicons, and that's just rolling out today. So those are the apps this week, and that was our podcast this week. It looks like Steven dropped out, but just to end the show, you can listen to Alphabet Scoop every Wednesday. We're switching back to this time frame from now on. And you can listen on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and of course 9to5google.com. On behalf of the both of us, thanks for tuning in, and see you next week.